Okay, this hour we'll take your phone calls with John Koerner as we talk about his work, why the CIA killed JFK and Malcolm X, and his work on the paranormal side on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're going to take your calls, too, with John Koerner in just a second. John, there were, what, two other failed attempts to kill Malcolm X prior to the assassination, right?
Right. There was the one in Cairo in Egypt where he was poisoned. And then there was this strange incident that happens when he tries to go to Paris to talk about, you know, his continued efforts to establish this unity between African people and African American people, and they will not let him into the country. And he feels this is very strange because he had just been there speaking just a few months before, and the French government later tells an African diplomat that they didn't let him in the country because they felt that he'd be killed in Paris, and they didn't want that to happen there.
Wow.
So there are those two incidents that happened before he's actually killed. And he tells Alex Haley that he's pretty convinced that it's not the Muslims that are trying to kill him. He knows for a fact they could not do these sorts of things, that it has to be the CIA that's doing this.
Have times changed, John? Or are they worse?
Well, the last part of my book is I try to kind of play out how these events have affected us to this very day. And I think it's so important to realize that the deaths of these four men have affected us in some very negative ways. Now we have this gap in wealth in the country. There's this 1% that owns so much of the nation's wealth and power. And whether that's good or bad is up for debate, but that's just the way things are today. And these four men were, you probably could say, the most effective advocates for the working class in the 20th century. And without them around, it changed the course of history. I mean, just as one example, you have Dr. King's Poor People's Campaign that was going to get going in 1968. Mm-hmm. And it was not going to just be for black people. It was going to be for black people, white people, Latinos, Asians. He was going to have this broad-based movement to change everything. And if you play that out, let's say RFK becomes president in 1969, that would be an amazing sort of confluence of events that would bring King's campaign into existence as RFK becomes president. It would achieve enormous amounts of success if that happens. Then just play this a bit more forward. RFK becomes president, then he exposes the truth about the JFK assassination, that the agency was behind it. He dismantles the agency, and the whole agency becomes put up for treason, perhaps, execution for treason. Then we have Malcolm X becoming perhaps ambassador to Africa. And how do we ever suspect that Africa becomes a seabed for terrorism? I mean, if you have RFK, Malcolm X, Dr. King doing all this positive work, again, without the agency in existence, does terrorism even take place in Africa? Does Sudan ever want to become, and other places like that, such hatred for our country? I mean, you can see so many things changing if these men were allowed to play out their lives.
When does this backfire on us, John? I mean, one could say it already did with 9/11, but
yeah.
It's the blowback theory again.
Well, so many things here just build up from if you start with the JFK assassination. I mean, at that point, the president was trying to just start a broad-based approach to end the Cold War, based on peace, not war. So you look at his approach, and you just have to admire how much pressure he was under to take the nation to war in Cuba, in Vietnam, and in Laos. And at every step of the way.
Well, and the problems with the Soviet Union at the time, too.
Certainly, yeah. The Cuban Missile Crisis. I mean, and he's able to beat back the war hawks consistently. And it might be worth just a moment of time just trying to mention some of the things the agency was doing to try to trick him into going to war. I mean, there was.
Okay, yeah. What did they want to do?
Well, back in Laos, we had this army called the Royal Laotian Army. And Kennedy knows that they're not, again, as I was mentioning before, they're not really worth backing. They're not a good fighting force. Fumi, the general there, is not to be trusted. But if we're going to win the war in Laos, the idea is that this army has to win the war. They're going to take power and become the government of Laos. Well, that army was actually created by the CIA, handpicked by Alan Dulles, of all people, the old director from the Eisenhower administration. So that particular army is the hopes and dreams of democracy in Laos. So we get to a point where it seems as if the agency wants to make it clear that they want Kennedy to commit ground troops to Laos. So what they end up doing is they tell Fumi, go to this place called Nam Tha. This is May of 1962. Fill up your troops there and, you know, just go over to this area called Nam Tha. The reason that they told them to go there was because it was isolated, and if they got attacked, they could be destroyed. So again, the agency is deliberately saying to Fumi, go to this spot and wait to be attacked by the communists, which happens. He gets destroyed, and the point is that if he gets destroyed, it'll force Kennedy to commit ground troops to Laos because now there's no hope for democracy. So then it ends up backfiring, and the army actually does get destroyed, and ends up forcing JFK to want to work for a peace treaty in Laos. So it's just a whole mess of things that they try to do, one of which is destroy their own army.
John, we're going to go to calls now, and we do have one call. His name is Joe, and apparently he's calling us live from Laos. So let's get him on and see what's going on. Joe, are you with us? Can you hear us?
Yeah, you can hear.
Boy, I'm not sure if we can hear you too well, but go ahead for a little bit.
Okay, slowly. I actually served 90, and I'm a 3-minute walk from the Mekong River as we speak, and I can back up a lot of the stuff that you're talking about in the middle of. In 1970, I was stationed down the road about 30 miles here, base, and half of operations were CIA in America. We had our own program called the Ravens. We flew dope out of drugs out of Laos on those airplanes because there was a customer. You're fighting a war.
No, there's no doubt. Joe, the line's a little broken. Nathan, see if you got a number where we can call him back, if that's possible. I think what he was trying to say there, John, is many of the things you were saying are accurate.
Yeah, a lot of this stuff has been backed up by Alfred McCoy. Did a lot of good work on this. He did a lot of good research on what's happening in Laos. And, I mean, as I mentioned before, I spent a lot of time listening to the conversations of President Kennedy in his Oval Office. I mean, the JFK Library has a lot of good recordings from the conversations he has with his cabinet. So this stuff is all there to be found out. It's just a matter of digging into it.
John, isn't technology amazing? I mean, here we are talking about episodes in Laos, and there we are getting a Skype call from Laos, for crying out loud.
I know, it really is amazing.
Let's go to Sam in Southern California. Welcome to the program, Sam.
Hi.
Hi there.
So my husband was in Vietnam. He was Special Forces.
Okay.
And he had was in charge of a small squad, and they were assigned most likely to the CIA, although he cannot say for sure that that was the case. He says that they were assigned as their cover to run drug protection for the drug producers from the highlands down to the coast. And then on the way back up, they went, as they were going from the coast back up to the highlands, they would do special forces stuff, opportunity, targets of opportunity and that sort of thing. But he's come to suspect, in fact, he's pretty sure that their cover was special forces, that they were really there to run drug trade.
And I'm sure, Sam, did he say that the drug trade was huge?
Huge, yes. And part of what convinced him that was really the reason that they had been placed there was because they, when he was debriefed, they were not interested in hearing much about the, if they had blown up ammo dumps and that sort of stuff. They were not interested in hearing about that, but they were very interested in hearing about who was in power in what area and what drug lords were running, controlling which districts. That was the stuff that they really wanted to know.
Any questions for Sam, John, before we let her go?
Well, it just reminds me of an incident in my book. It seems like a lot of these men who were working with the agency, they were just disposable. They just treated them like garbage. I mean, there was this incident that happens in September of 1963 where one of these aircrafts gets shot down in Laos, and two men named Charles Herrick and Joseph Cheney, who were working for the agency, get killed when the aircraft crashes to the earth, and their remains were not returned to our country for 40 years. And the agency denies that they worked for the agency, and they could be expendable. If they want to run drugs, that's fine. But once they get killed, then they just kind of write them off. And
that's right.
It really is quite, I would say, just disrespectful to their family.
Disallow any knowledge of their existence.
Absolutely.
Sam, thanks for your call. We'll go to Dan now, truck driving in Des Moines. Dan, you're on with us on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, sir.
How you doing, George and John?
Good, Dan.
My question is, I read the book Malcolm X years ago, years and years ago, and there was conflict between Louis Farrakhan and Malcolm X over the leadership of the Nation of Islam, and it's believed that Louis Farrakhan had Malcolm X killed for the leadership of the Nation of Islam. Do you have any material on that or any truth about that? That was my question.
Okay. I'll let you listen on your radio. I have not heard that, John. How about you?
Yeah, it's one of the theories. Certainly Malcolm X's daughter thought that he was behind it. And there was a court case about that where she had to get, I think, a restraining order that Farrakhan placed against her because she was so convinced that he was behind the assassination.
Jeez.
It seems like it's more conjecture. It seems like from the evidence that I've gathered, that most of the motive there behind this assassination and the chance and the ability to do this was from the agency. In fact, Malcolm X himself says to Alex Haley that Farrakhan and the Muslims were not doing this. They couldn't do the sort of things that were being done to him. It seemed to him, anyway, Malcolm X, that it was the agency.
John, when Nixon finally got us out of Vietnam, and it collapsed. South Vietnam collapsed the minute we left. But how was he able to get us out when the other presidents either couldn't or lost their lives over it?
Well, let's not forget that he kept us there for a number of years before that happens. I mean, he gets elected president in 68.
Right. So 4 years. Four years were there.
So there's this pressure in 1972 to end the war, because he wants to get a second term for the presidency. So he wants to give the appearance that they're going to bring the war to an end because of that election cycle. But the first administration, there's an expansion of the war in terms of the covert operations are expanded, the number of sorties are expanded from the Air Force. There's an invasion of Cambodia and into Laos to try to cut the Ho Chi Minh Trail, which completely fails. So he has a number of things to expand the war, and only when it's completely failing and the public has had enough of this and he wants a second term, only then would he want to start peace negotiations.
All right, let's go to Bob in St. Louis. Hey, Bob, go ahead.
Yeah, I was wondering if your guest ever looked into the Israeli connection here, because Kennedy wanted Israel have no part in nuclear expansion. And Johnson was the most pro-Israeli president we've had. He's the one that called back our aircraft from saving the guys in USS Liberty. So I never heard anybody talking about that, and I was wondering what your guest knows about that, because it seems like I've heard a lot of people say there's a big connection there.
John, do we know anything there?
Well, again, the focus of my book is from my research, and I try to stick to this specific point because, to me, it makes the most sense because it follows the money, and it fits with the evidence. I'm not saying that that is not true, and I do mention that a number of people did want the president dead, but from my perspective, it seems as if the evidence points to the agency, and this is the primary motive why they want him to be dead. They're making so much money off of the drug trade, and consistently speaking throughout the administration, they try again and again and again to get him to commit ground troops, which he will not do. So, again, it's a valid point, but again, it's just off topic for my book.
How hated was Kennedy?
Well, again, it starts off with his Catholicism. I mean, you go with that and go forward. He has to deal with that in the campaign. And then once we get to the presidency, he does a number of things that start to anger people. He starts a program on civil rights that is going to be, to the South's perspective, completely unacceptable. He has the first civil rights bill that is going to be passed in 1964. He has a large number of black judges that get appointed. He signs executive orders for housing and for transportation to make them fair to black people. I mean, all these different things are changing things so quickly. And then you have the agency, the CIA, that, of course, we talked about is against his policies. So there's so many people that we're talking about here that want the president dead.
We have Randy now, first-time caller in Kansas City, Missouri. Hey, Randy, thank you for calling.
Well, first of all, thank you, George, and thanks for having John on tonight. I do a 60-mile commute every night, and you guys are a blessing to me.
Beautiful.
I appreciate what John said, and I kind of wanted to echo and ask a question. My father served in 68 and 70 there, and he didn't talk a lot about the war, but later on, as I was a young adult, we were talking shop one day, and he always echoed that the American youth was sent over there competitive as they were to win a war in which the government tied their hands in Washington. And he felt like the government was supplying drugs to those kids because it wasn't like there was a pusher on the corner, like in the inner city. And more kids came home with drug habits than went over there with drug habits. And this kind of confirms what he had told me in so many words without really knowing the whole truth behind it. So hearing this story is pretty impressive to, now that he's gone years later, understand a little more of what he was trying to say without knowing the whole truth. I appreciate him, John, for coming forward with this book and having the nerve to put out the truth. And how does he feel about that many addicts coming home, and does he feel that wasn't in fact the case, the government was behind it?
Go ahead, John.
Well, one thing I want to mention, too, is that my paranormal walks, we give part of our profits to the disabled veterans from the Vietnam War. So part of the profits from that, our company, goes to try to help them. And I want to mention, too, that if you look at the statistics of what these men suffer from, it's not just the PTSD they suffer from. It's also, there's a high rate of divorce. Many of them have criminal records. And you can trace this back, again, to the heroin and the exposure to it from the CIA. So, I mean, you look at the ripple effects of what they're doing there in Southeast Asia. It affects so many people's lives in such a negative way that we feel this to this very day. And my heart just goes out to these men, what they had to go through.
We're going to come back and take final phone calls with you, John, in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, would you like to see a psychic medium do her thing on television? You can. Laura Lee will be part of our Beyond Belief this week, and you can watch it for free. Simply go to this website for the free trial. It's called beyondbelief.com. Simple as that. Internet-based, but you can also hook it up to your flat screen, beyondbelief.com. And welcome to Coast. We're with Professor John Koerner, of course. We're talking about his work, Why the CIA Killed JFK and Malcolm X. John, since all this has happened, of course, are they running amok today? Are they in charge? Are they doing whatever they want to do?
Well, we certainly know that there's been some problems recently with the agency, hasn't there been?
Oh, yes.
A lot of trouble, haven't they? And it just goes back to the idea of, should they even exist in the first place? I mean, President Kennedy felt that they should not even have the power that they were given. President Truman also talks about the fact he felt that they were getting out of control after the assassinations. He hints that perhaps they were getting beyond their original intention. He said the men he appointed were men of honor and integrity, and that has started to change once you get to the 1960s. So JFK starts to feel that at some point they need to be reined in. He, of course, was a World War II veteran, and the model of intelligence back then was the president gets the reports from the Department of Defense, or Department of War, as it used to be. So when that changes with the Cold War, that gives so much power to this black budget agency that's, of course, we could probably even say unconstitutional. The president feels the same way. And then this, once the Bay of Pigs hits and he starts to not trust the CIA, he shifts their covert operations to the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And that was just one of many things he starts to do to try to neuter their power. But then Johnson takes power and he expands their power in Southeast Asia. So if JFK stays in office and we get another administration from Robert Kennedy, this agency probably doesn't even exist today.
Great call there. Let's go to Tom in Riverside, California, west of the Rockies. Tom, you're up with us.
Hi, George and John.
Hello, Tom.
I like the program is good. I wanted to ask John what he thinks about the connection to the current situation with the CIA, the torture policy, which Dick Cheney seems to think is a matter of how effective it is. And I can't imagine being an American growing up in this country that that would be something that the vice president would say when it was just condemned from the time I was a kid. How could you take that position? And if there was any authority in my hands, the man would be in prison. George H. Bush, seems to be in the center. He was in the CIA during the Kennedy assassination. He was involved with the CIA. He was connected to the Dulles brothers. His father was. Now his second child is about to compete for the presidency of this country, and it's all part of this. What do you think? There's a lot of other things. Russia's being strong-armed into a retreat by this country for the second time. It looks more like not just a drug trade that was involved here. This is much wider spread. This is for world government. This is for world control.
It has expanded, Tom. There's no doubt about that. Would you agree, John?
Absolutely. And, from my perspective, I teach American history, and I try to talk to my students about the idea of, what if? What if could happen? How could things happen differently if just a few things change in history? And we do not need to get to this point. I mean, if Robert Kennedy became president, today would be very, very different. We probably would have had him at some point dismantle the agency. And he would, at that point in time, point out that what they were doing was wrong, and they would be held accountable, and there would be executions for treason. And then all the different hatred that exists to our country today, in the Middle East, in Africa, in large part comes from their meddling, like in Iran, for example. I mean, different things that they've done throughout the 60s and 70s in that country, for example, comes right from the CIA. So if that it doesn't happen, then we don't have that hatred that exists towards our nation. And history plays out differently. There's no torturing that would happen that we're talking about today that doesn't even need to happen. We might even have a war on terrorism. So many things happen differently if these men can live out their lives.
I've long wondered that if we weren't the ones meddling, if somebody else would be doing it in our place.
Yeah, that's quite possible, right? And someone just enters the void.
Yep. They step right up to the plate, as we say. Are you free to talk about anything you want in your classroom?
Absolutely. There's a lot of academic freedom. Yeah, it's very open-minded.
What do these 18 to 22-year-olds want to know about these days?
Well, I teach both sides of history. The part one and part two. And once we get to the assassinations, they perk up. I mean, this is what they're most interested in. It seems like they're very well aware of the fact that these particular four events are such changing points for where we get to today that it seems to interest them the most.
Ironically, none was born during these episodes.
And neither was I. I wasn't either. So it's my parents, of course, were alive then. They remember.
You mean you missed the moon landing?
Yeah, I was born in 77, so yeah. But my parents certainly have engendered in me a respect for President Kennedy. They remember when he visited Buffalo in October of 1962, before the missile crisis. So it's certainly, from my family's perspective, an important story to tell because, you know, we come from a nation and a family that really, I should think, respect history more than we do.
If there was so much money being made on the drug trade, I have got to believe that it's got to be even bigger today.
Well, he did mention that Afghanistan is mm-hmm. where it's at today. And if you just trace it back to the Vietnam War and into Laos, the agency proves that if you can just make the commitment to war and justify staying through either a war on terrorism or a war on communism, you can make a lot of money for yourself and for the agency.
Let's go to Ryan now in San Francisco. Good morning, Ryan. You're up with us.
Good morning. So I was just wondering about sort of extraterrestrials in JFK, and I was thinking maybe there's some kind of conspiracy behind it. Was JFK involved with extraterrestrials?
Well, there's some talk. Richard Dolan has written a number of books about the ET presence, has talked about the fact that, you know, it's conceivable that JFK wanted to make an announcement about the possible extraterrestrial presence, and they didn't want him to. Or that Marilyn Monroe knew something and was going to go public with it, and they didn't want her to either. That's off the path here that John Kerner has written about, but that's a long, distinct possibility. Jeff in Culver City, California now. Go ahead, Jeff.
Hello, George and Mr. Kerner. Yes, the guest was on Coast to Coast a while back named James Genio, who briefly mentioned John F. Kennedy's Middle East policy. Mm-hmm. There wasn't enough time for him to expound on that. Now, we all know that the newly formed State of Israel was at odds with the Kennedys on AZC, the American Zionist Council. It turned into APAC, American-Israeli Political Affairs Committee, and their secretive nuclear program and the displaced Palestinians trying to keep their land or trying to get back to it. And, of course, Malcolm X wasn't a favorite of theirs. But I'd like to know, Mr. Kerner, of Dr. King's position on Israel, since all of these men were eliminated in quick succession. And I'll take your answer off the air.
I don't know. Can you answer that, John?
Dr. King's position on Israel?
Yeah.
Again, it's kind of beyond my area of expertise. Basically, I just want to...
Beyond your pay grade, as we say right, in the Navy. Let's go to Wayne in Chicago, Illinois. Wayne, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi, Wayne.
George, I'd like to thank your guest for his indomitable courage and just his willingness to seek out the truth despite what has been done to him.
You are right on.
Mm-hmm. What I want to ask was a couple of quick questions. Okay, during the Iran-Contra affair, the government was also running tons of cocaine from Middle America, Central America, and South America to the United States, dumping it on the black community, using the drug profits for the Contra affair. And they call themselves killing two birds with one stone, helping to destroy the black community and satisfying their desire for war with the Iran-Contra affair. But I've talked to a lot of white people who are even angrier than black people because it means that the CIA didn't care about white people either, because white people were going to try this drug too.
That's right.
So what I want to know is, for instance, did J. Edgar Hoover, was he in collusion with the CIA as far as the assassination of Malcolm X? And another thing, what about the connection to George H.W. Bush, that Iran-Contra connection with the drugs coming in the 80s? And nothing's been done about it at all. The drug pushers who were pushing the drugs are all in prison, street dealers, but the people in the government, they're still walking around like Ollie North. And I'll hang up and take your answer off the air. Thank you very much.
Okay, Wayne. I don't think, John, anything happened in this country politically or behind the scenes without J. Edgar Hoover having a finger in the pie.
Absolutely.
Would you agree?
Yeah. But Hoover was monitoring Malcolm X on an hour-to-hour basis in the months before his assassination. In fact, the entire CIA, the Director of Intelligence for Naval Operations, was monitoring him. I mean, the whole intelligence apparatus of the country was watching this man on an hour-to-hour basis, including Hoover. And the man was talking about, again, how drugs were affecting African-American communities. Malcolm X was just pointing this out, again, on a speech-to-speech basis, how drugs, the white man's poison, was just horribly affecting black communities, and the agency was, again, letting this happen. So it's such an important point to make because it's lasting to this very day. I mean, heroin is such an addictive drug. It's very difficult to kick that particular drug. So it's such an important point to make that Hoover, of course, has a connection to this, and Malcolm X was making these points decades ago, things we're still dealing with today.
And the Iran-Contra, of course, always about drugs, always about money.
Right. And Gary Webb was talking about that, too, the reporter for the San Jose Mercury News, the fact that the flow of drugs in South America and Middle America is also right from the agency. And this all really begins, again, in 68, when Vang Pao and Santos Tropicante meet in January of that year and begin the effort to expand all the drugs that they're making in Laos to our part of the world. Mm-hmm. And part of the efforts to get that accomplished was to eliminate Dr. King and RFK. And once they were out of the way, they could expand into the other parts of the world, and they could guarantee under President Nixon that would happen.
I wonder if they have a finger in the methamphetamine pie these days. What do you think of that?
You never know. I mean, it's another drug.
It's the cheap drug, but it's plentiful out there.
Certainly is. I think Andre Agassi, in fact, was affected by that for a number of years. He had battles with that.
And, you know, they've got huge mills in Missouri. I'm in St. Louis right now for a couple more weeks. And, I mean, Missouri's a huge methamphetamine area.
Mm-hmm.
Huge. But you never know who's really behind it.
Yeah, like with the way I look at history is, I mean, if you follow the money, then you can follow the truth. I mean, if there's a profit to be made in these different areas, I think you can get closer to the truth. And that's why I think my thesis makes the most sense, because it fits in with that and also with the Vietnam idea.
Have your colleagues read your book, and what do they say about it, if they have?
Well, the book just came out on November 28th, so it's kind of fresh.
Well, we're honored to have you as a relatively new guest on this.
Right, yeah, it's cutting-edge stuff. So, but they've been pretty open to it. I mean, I've talked about my other work with them. I did a book about the McKinley assassination conspiracy, and that was pretty well received. So it certainly is a climate I feel comfortable talking about with my colleagues.
Let's go to Joe, Dayton, Ohio. Welcome to the program, Joseph.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'd like to get your opinion on the confession of James Files, claiming to be one of the shooters at the Kennedy assassination, and also his connections to the CIA.
Well, there are a number of people who have claimed that they knew certain individuals who were part of the assassination, and he was one of them who said he was. You know, he might have been. He might have been. John, again, that's probably out of your pay league.
Well, the way I look at this, I mean, there's a lot of connections there. The one I think that is the most credible are the ones that come from E. Howard Hunt. I mean, Hunt was...
Yes, and why would he lie to his son?
Right, and he, at the end of his life there, he knows there's nothing to gain from lying. He's about to die, and he just kind of spills his guts about what he knew about the assassination. And he names names. He's very specific. And he talks about, you know, who's involved with the assassination. And one key figure that he talks about, in fact, we can mention him just briefly, is Morales. David Morales is a man who is directly connected to the drug trade in Laos. I mean, he's one of these guys that again and again shows up over and over again in terms of trying to figure out how the drug trade works in terms of the nuts and bolts operations of it. He's there.
Yeah, but, you know, Files claims that he was on the grassy knoll a long, long time ago. And the FBI, of course, said that his allegations were not credible. But you know what? Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, you just don't know. I mean, but I put a lot of credence, though, in what Hunt is saying, because it seems to check out with the facts. I mean, just going with Morales for a minute here, I mean, that particular man, for example, he's a very ruthless operative, and a number of different people have reported seeing him show up at different points in the story here. He shows up at the Ambassador Ballroom in Los Angeles when RFK is assassinated. So he's there. He's running the drug operations in Laos. He's a member of the Operation Phoenix team that is part of the, again, the operations in Laos to try to take care of as opposition to the agency. So, again, this is one point of many that Hunt is making that I think gives him some credibility.
Let's go to Pat in Minneapolis. We'll get you in here, Pat. Go ahead.
In a mystery, when there are many people with motives, you can't just assume because of you find somebody that it wasn't somebody else. Yes, there was other people with money and even other motives to get rid of Kennedy. And I agree on everything that you say about the CIA except one thing. My finger has moved many times on this, and I think the two clues that made me pick out somebody else, and you brought him up, J. Edgar Hoover, is he had already seen Dulles drop kicked out of his big position.
Mm-hmm.
He knew that Robert was drop kicking a lot of mafioso back to Sicily and taking away power from the mafia. And if anybody knew about organized crime, it was the Kennedys because their father was deep in with it and everything else. But the person who was about to be drop kicked and knew it was Hoover. And I got the clue, though, that really gave me, made my finger move back and forth and finally away from Hoover, then back to Hoover. Kitty Kelly was an author who wrote a book about Sinatra. And she wrote unauthorized biographies, bestsellers. An incident, there was a wall of protection around Kennedy that was greater than anything the Secret Service could give, and that was his friendship with Sinatra. Because the mafia, it would turn out, would be important to stitch together in this plot.
But remember, though, that wall fell apart on November 22nd, 1963. John, good luck with the book. John Koerner, our guest, Why the CIA Killed JFK and Malcolm X. Up next, we talk about your awakening.